and give a little heads up on how the meeting's going to be run. Comment will be heard at the beginning and end as usual. Public comment may be made during the meeting by clicking and raising your hand. To raise your hand, click on the participants tab at the bottom of your screen and then right click on to raise your hand. Once you are acknowledged, the host will give you audio permission to speak. To raise a hand before people participating by phone, only press the asterisk. The host will monitor raised hands and assist with unmuting and muting public comments. So roll call and voting. Beverly will take attendance by voice roll call and voting by voice roll call. I will be calling for the votes. If your screen does not reflect the correct name or title, please take this time to change it so that we're able to address you properly. If you're unable to do so, ask the host for assistance. I think we're ready to start the meeting.
Joel, this is Martin here on the roll call. If when we do the roll call and Beverly calls out the jurisdiction, if you could state your name so she could, since we're doing this virtually, she can check it off the roll, the member roster. Okay. Go ahead, Beverly.
Life. Cathedral City. Coachella. Desert Hot Springs.
This is Danny Porras, Desert Hot Springs.
Thank you. Indian Wells. Indio.
From Wausau, City of Indio.
Thank you. La Quinta.
Brian McKinney, City of La Quinta.
Palm Desert. Palm Springs.
This is Joel Montal with Palm Springs. I see Tom Garcia is in for Palm Desert. I'm not sure if you heard or not.
Rancho Mirage. County of Riverside.
Mo Salama, County of Riverside.
Agua Caliente.
And Malcolm Agua Caliente.
We have a quorum.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to chime in. This is Ken Somalo, Indian Wells. I had technical difficulty.
Thank you.
And Tom Garcia with Palm Desert. I was just unmuted. Thank you.
I believe we got John Corella as well, Cathedral City.
John. Okay, so we're moving on to item 3, public comments on agenda items. This is a time and place for members of the public to address the Transportation Technical Advisory Subcommittee on agenda items at the discretion of the chair. Comments may be taken at this time. At the time items are presented, please limit comments to 3 minutes. Do we have anyone for public comment? None. Moving on to item 4, chair and director announcements. I have no announcements. Does anyone from TREG have an announcement?
I have no announcements.
Okay, item 5, consent calendar. Approve the April 13th, 2020 Transportation Technical Advisory Subcommittee minutes. All in favor?
We need a motion and a second, please.
Okay, could we have a motion?
So moved, Indian Wells.
Second.
Seconded, County of Riverside.
Favor?
Aye.
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 I guess it would be easier to say if there's anyone opposed, right? If not, we just move on. Is there anyone opposed? See none. Sorry, I muted myself here. Item 6, discussion and action, regional signal synchronization pilot program, 6A, staff report.
I've got that. So this is not going to be a very technical staff report. And the reason that it's not is because we've already hashed through the technical stuff. It's in that 283-page report. It's in some of the things before. So I'm just going to take us on a review of the process up to date. I do have Carlos Ortiz, who can answer any technical questions that you may have. And we'll also hear from Chris Gunterson, who is going to share from his workstation in La Quinta a kind of a live demo to show what we did on the pilot. That being said, in the beginning, there is chaos. Entropy, 11 jurisdictions floating away from each other. We had multiple vendors, multiple manufacturers, multiple eras of manufacturers, multiple ancillary equipment, not just the controllers, but everything from brand new cutting edge stuff to stuff from the 1960s in technology. We had a veritable museum of traffic, signal synchronization. Then came signal synchronization. This project went out for RFP in 2015. By 2018, we had a plan that was approved in January, a master plan that laid out that there would be two traffic controllers throughout the region, Econolite and McCain. That's where we started initially. There was a very solid thought from this T-Task group that they really wanted to stick with their existing vendors. And I think just as maybe more importantly, there was agreement for the first time in the history of the Coachella Valley. There was agreement, there was a consensus on all of the remaining technology. As you recall, we had many meetings, 30-some meetings. We heard from 40-some vendors. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that we had a consensus on the equipment, the technology that mattered, everyone agreed. Some of the equipment didn't matter as much, and we were okay with just a standard specification for that. But for things like cameras and switches and certain other things, we all agreed we knew what we wanted, and the vendors proved that for us. But there were issues, difficult issues. As we started to put the actual project together, we found difficulties in communications. We found difficulties in laying out the network on how it would be communicated between cities and between the region. Different technology, different manufacturers, I'm not just talking controllers, but different manufacturers didn't talk to other manufacturers. Some of this could be overcome by paying for software to be written, but that software would have to be written for every new piece of equipment, every new application into the future, and we just didn't see that as a terribly tenable project. And so there was a question asked, why? Why can't the region just have one controller? all of your cities, when you buy a new controller, you don't put it out to bid with just a spec and accept low bid with any controller. You put it out to bid for a specific controller because that's what you have in your city. And that's what everybody does throughout the country for the most part. Some cities are so large that they have different vendors in different sections of their city. But for the most part, all jurisdictions utilize primarily one vendor. So why can't we behave that way in the region? Why can't we have controllers that can communicate with each other without expensive software being written to facilitate that? Why can't we have ones positioned for the future that could save us money? The executive committee says, yes, let's try and do that. And we pivoted, call that the pivot. As you recall, we brought in, we talked to McCain and we talked to Econolite, but we brought in four others representing the top manufacturers in the country, and a set of regional requirements was developed based on our regional needs. And as we'll discuss, that's exactly what Federal Highway had in mind. They changed their procurement regulations. And if you read through the Federal Register, it was primarily to promote innovation, to promote entrepreneurship, to promote better mousetraps, and to allow jurisdictions to more easily acquire the equipment that they needed. So we brought in the six leading manufacturers in the country. There's more of them. And one or two of the ones we brought in really don't have much of a presence in Southern California or even in California, but we brought them in. We heard their presentations. At the time, one manufacturer met the regional requirements that we had laid out, and everybody agreed on what those requirements were. That was Innolight. You'll recall visuals like this, where we had collected data on the tops, on all six, and kind of scored them on whether, on many dimensions, but mostly on whether they met our criteria or not. One met all of them, a couple were close, and the rest really weren't what we were looking for. But there was concern, legitimate concern from all of you. And so we set up a pilot to test the new standard. It was new standard, it was new technology. There are a lot of questions. Will this work? Will it be easier? Will it be harder to work? Will it be make our lives more easy? And most importantly, will it do what we want it to do? Because it represented the new standard, and it was the only one at the time that did meet the requirements, we chose Innolight, not choosing the specific manufacturer. In fact, at the time we called it Acme, from the Roadrunner Coyote days, a company that makes everything. But Innolight did meet all of our requirements. And so we used it in the pilot. And everybody agreed upon that. We even brought in an expert, Ralph Boas, who sits on some of these national committees that set up the standards that get approved. And these are committees that, in the case of controllers, the controller vendors sit on these same committees. It's public and private, and a vast array of expertise that sits on these committees. And Ralph, without a horse in the race, explained to us that Innolight did meet these requirements, and that at the time they were the only ones that did. And his thought that I recall him sharing with us was that if cities would just demand that set of requirements that we are demanding, all of the vendors, all of the manufacturers would go into that direction. It's just that most cities just buy what they already have. They aren't looking to the future. They're just looking for the newest and greatest from the manufacturer that they're already utilizing in their city. And that was one of the things that Federal Highway was trying to conquer with their new procurement regulations. So we did a pilot project. And very intrepid group of people from the municipalities, from our vendors, a contractor that installed these, Intellite and their software, Kufri people were there. We put in 10, swapped out 10 controllers at 10 intersections, actually one of the, in three different cities. This was mostly done before 7 o'clock in the morning, keep it out of traffic. We did it, install one in city of Rancho Mirage, representing a shared intersection, much like the shared corridor on Monterey between Rancho Mirage and Palm Desert. We had a shared intersection on Duval of Rancho Mirage and Cathedral City. So we did, with Rancho Mirage's permission, we did connect into that so that we could test the ability to communicate with that Econolite controller, Cobalt controller. Pilot was a success. You've looked at, I don't know if anybody's read the entire thing because most of it's data, but if you've seen the conclusions, it accomplished what we wanted it to. What we wanted to see it accomplish was that the things that we have in our requirements for the region, the hardware and software platform that we utilized in the pilot accomplished what we wanted. Again, 10 intersections. That was in the city of Palm Springs, the city of Cathedral City, and the city of La Quinta, and one in Rancho Mirage, 3+ cities. The regional requirements that we developed worked. And I think that was success. You know, we can justify, we can justify those regional requirements. And in fact, when we spoke several times with Federal Highway, that was one of the things that they encouraged us to do a demo. They also asked us to do the demo outside of construction to keep it out of the contractor's hands, because the contractor's motive is purely low cost. But it validated our requirements. It validated that we could meet them with something. And at this point, if there's any technical questions from up to this point, Carlos can answer them. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Chris Gunterson, who will share some details from the actual pilot. Are there any questions for Carlos? No questions. I think I will stop sharing mine so that Chris can share his.
All right, good morning. This is Chris from the city of La Quinta. And the pilot program was a success. And what I have up in front of you here on the screen is the two different softwares that we utilized. And on this side over here is the regional software. And then this is the MaxView software for the controllers. I'm gonna bring that one up first. And so you'll notice that we have La Quinta, Cathedral City, Rancho Mirage, and Palm Springs. So from a regional perspective, we can monitor any intersection that's connected to this system. And what I'm going to do is come on over here to La Quinta. And the closer I zoom in, you get more detail you get on the intersection. And if I wanted to actually, this will also give us status in terms of what coordination pattern we're in. These are just giving a high level view of some of the capabilities. And then as a traffic engineer, if I wanted to click on that and open it up, I can see what's actually taking place at the intersection. You can see the indications changing. If you look up in this area, you can see the splits and how they're behaving. There's other status reports that you can run, and you can actually do a report that shows you, are the signals forcing off? Are they gapping out? So that if there's gap out time that you can use somebody else, traffic engineer can make decisions on that. Now, keep in mind that from a regional perspective, we're just there to advise the local agencies, and this is information that the local agencies could use to their advantage to make things run smoother through their city. Again, being a monitoring, I'll show you some other things that are kind of important. Does anybody have any questions on this screen here and what you're looking at? All right, I'm gonna go and close that and zoom back out. There was our other major intersection. Some of the things that we encountered during the pilot project was a little bug came and bit us in the COVID-19. So we've done a lot of retiming of the intersections and monitoring the intersections utilizing the traffic controllers. We even had some faulty wiring at Highway 111 in Washington, which shorted out. And we actually even killed a controller out there for InnoLight. And they quickly came out and replaced it. And that all has been repaired and fixed, and it's been running fine ever since.
The faulty wiring wasn't the fault of our new equipment.
The wiring, it was not the result of the equipment. It was a result of faulty wiring. And as we move over into the West Valley, we noticed this yesterday, which is kind of a neat thing to point out, is if I zoom in on this intersection here, from a monitoring perspective, we found a problem at this intersection. If you zoom in right here with the flashing hand, you'll notice this little white finger pushing a button. That is actually a stuck pedestrian call, which is going to keep placing the call. This is a small intersection, so it's not a big deal. If this were taking place at 111 in Washington, where we have a 47-second PED time, that could really hinder coordination. So from a monitoring perspective, we could call Palm Springs right now and tell them they have an issue over there for their techs to go repair. So just a little bit of a peek into how the system could be useful. Again, this is looking across the entire valley from a monitoring perspective. And each of these intersections can be programmed with alarms that can notify us, so we don't have to sit there and watch it all the time. The system will notify us if there is an issue. I received several calls when we were starting to deal with the problem at 111 in Washington. I got calls from the techs at CT West, said, did you know that your intersection's in red flash? And at the time I did not, so it was a good warning for us. So that was itself was a neat test of the system. So this system here manages the databases for the controllers that are at the intersections. And what I want to do is back out just a little bit here and move into, just real quick, the other reason it would be good for regional monitoring is we can monitor coordination as we pass from one city into the next and see if we're synchronizing. So if somebody's traveling through Palm Desert into Indio, are they gonna be synced up with those lights? And if they're not, we can notify the different agencies and say, we recommend a timing change here, or we talk to their traffic engineer and see if we can come up with a solution. So there's a lot of different things. And I'm kind of speaking in the position of CVAG right now. It's the easiest way for me to explain it. But I would actually be the city getting the call in that point, whoever's monitoring from the CVAG perspective.
So Chris, I think you told me there was a an exercise you were able to do with all of your signals and reviewing the timing and phasing.
So what we did in our city is our fiber has just been recently connected. And so I now have all of our signals connected through our system. We're currently running the Centrax ATMS software. Unfortunately, the controllers that were part of the pilot project do not integrate with that system. So they're only the Econolite system can integrate with that unless it's a very old version of their software that's an NTCIP compliant that could be loaded on there. But many of those are so old in terms of the software that it's not current enough. So we've gone through the process of migrating all of our software over from an old Aries software to the new Centrax software. And I'm glad Eric brought that up, because one of the things that we were running into a challenge is I've got two different types of controllers along Washington now, but I want to keep them synced up. And one of the things that we were able to do with the Intellite controller, which is quite interesting, is I have our central software reaching out to that controller to get the timestamp for our city, so that our controllers are getting the same synchronization with the Intellite controller. So we've now solved the problem of having two different controllers on the same corridor being synchronized by two different softwares. Why is that important? Because as we move forward with the project, we're going to need to be able to sync multiple controllers as the project's being unfolded. For example, Washington and 111 will be part of the first phase in our city, but I'm going to have whole kinds of other systems that are going to need to be brought up to speed, and we'll need to keep those in time. So as I back out here, I'm going to move over to the regional, what's called Open TMS, and this is a regional system that monitors many different types of equipment. And I'm going to come over here to devices and click on signals. And so you could see the signals there. Now this is a guest version of the software, so we cannot actually click on these and see the active signals, but in the full version, we would be able to. And then we have status screens over here on the left that show us communication, controller status. One thing I would like to point out that was different in the pilot program is that because we're dealing with cell modems, there is some latency. So there is a little delay from what you see on the screen as to what you see, that is what actually happening out in the field. But with the fiber that's going in throughout the project, that will be rectified quite easily. If I wanted to manage other devices, you can see a list of some of the other devices. We have, you know, CMS signs, we have detectors, there'll be video detection cameras. As I switch over to the map, you'll notice this little weather cloud. We can have weather stations that are being monitored. And so there's a lot of different things that can happen, but we're going to be managing corridors. And we're going to be managing special events. We have a small little event that takes place over in La Quinta, the tennis tournament. And so I can just by a click, I can zoom in on La Quinta, and I would be able to see all the devices that were connected. And then we have another little event, a little concert out here over in Indio, and I can just click on Indio, and it would bring up where the event is there. And again, we can manage all the CMSs, the signals, timing plans from here. And this is where the cooperation of the CVAG comes in, is all of this stuff is worked on ahead of time, predetermined and approved by all the cities. This is not something that CVAG would do on their own. This is all pre-approved hard work that's put in ahead of time that can be implemented. If I wanted to back out and monitor the I-10 corridor, I could do that. And then we could also zoom in on the Palm Springs area. And all this stuff I created in about 5 minutes right before this meeting. So it's not hard to create these zoom in features. One of the things that's going to be happening in the Palm Springs area is the construction of the ice for the ice hockey rink. And with this, you'll be able to manage the traffic for that with special events. Also manage parking. There's just a lot of features that this allows us to monitor. And instead of each city doing it on their own, not everybody can afford to have somebody sitting and monitoring. And what the CBAG project does is allow us to set stuff up so it's monitored automatically and notifies cities when that happens by all being interconnected. The other thing that's nice about this software is it is capable of expanding into the connected vehicle realm and autonomous vehicles. One of the powerful tools that we recently had an incident on I-10 where I-10 got shut down and traffic had to be diverted. With the pre-approved plans that we can put in place, we would be able to manage traffic around the incidents on the 10 freeway to impact the cities as least as possible and keep traffic flowing as much as we can. So there's a lot of neat tools with this. It's very expandable. As far as I know, there's Q-Free and the Siemens software that is able, has the capabilities of doing this. And this software is very user-friendly once you get into it. So at this point, what I want to do, that's pretty much the live demonstration. What I'll do is back off and allow people to ask questions.
Hey, Chris, you had not officially part of our pilot, but you had also done some things in La Quinta touching other manufacturers. Maybe just share a thought or two on that.
Okay, that'd be great. So what we did is at three other intersections, and I'll zoom in. You can't see them on here, but at Calle Tampico and at Village Shopping Center, we installed the Siemens M60 controller. They're actually still out there operating. And then at Washington and Avenue 47 down here, we installed the TrafficWare Commander controller. And although we didn't have any problems with the TrafficWare Commander, it operated fine the whole time. There are some things in the report that you can read about why we did not leave it in. It's currently out. The two Siemens controllers are still operating. And again, we haven't had any issues with those. And we also have the DSRC radios deployed here for the connected car demo, which I still have. And we can arrange that. We'll put our masks and gloves on. I can take you for a ride in one of our city vehicles and show you the connected car. But most of my findings were put into the report if you wanted to read about the different controllers and my experience with them. Probably the biggest thing I got out of the demo, the controllers work fine. Where we're going to need to focus our energies as we move forward, which whatever controller we use that meets the specifications, we're going to need to really focus on exposure to the technicians and lots of training. The more that my techs put themselves in front of these controllers, the more they get used to them and more comfortable with them. But nothing can replace good training and exposure and time, allowing them to use it. So did that answer your question there, Eric?
Yeah. And I'd be interested in questions other members of the committee might have.
No other questions? All right, and I will stop sharing my screen and kick it back over to you.
So I think, Chris, that the purpose of the pilot was to kind of validate the requirements that we had and ensure that there was at least one manufacturer that could meet those requirements. And I think the general conclusion is that the pilot was a success. And that's one of the things that there's three things that I would like to accomplish with this meeting. One is to have TTAS basically accept the results of the pilot. And then two would be to discuss, as we will do in a minute, Intellite. And third, that assuming that we've accepted that the pilot was successful and completed, to authorize, have this group authorize the release of the PSNE to the jurisdictions. Those are the three things I was hoping to accomplish with this meeting. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is going to bid. There seem to be a few misconceptions, and it has all changed, literally late last year, effective this year. This is a federal contract, and it will be low bid. We won't have a selection committee. There won't be, it won't be like some of the other projects that we interview contractors for. This is low bid, and low bid based on specifications and requirements that we have. But if you think about a bid package put together by perhaps two different contractors, it's very possible that something like controllers and the software platform supporting those controllers, it's very possible that that won't be the largest cost item on the contractor's bid. Therefore, our ability to control the manufacturers, not just on controllers, but on any piece of technology that we don't specify, is filled with uncertainty. There's a risk of time and money, like Bosch cameras, we all agreed, even though there's some Kohu already in use in the Valley, we all agreed that all things being equal, Bosch was head and shoulders above the others. And the fact that they've pushed their analytics to the edge, the fact that their cameras have internal analytics that will be very useful for what we want to use it for. There was a strong consensus that Bosch should be the camera. Well, we would have specified that manufacturer anyway, but especially now that the feds have relaxed their procurement regulation, we will require Bosch cameras. So the contractor can't fish around for a lower bid on that. When it comes to anything that just has a specification or requirements, they could select, for example, a Chinese startup company claiming to meet our requirements and specifications, and we would have to take time and money to vet that, and if they would have to prove it to us. Ultimately, we would probably have to spend our time and our money verifying that they met the standard that we're looking for. Doesn't mean we can't do that. We've met with Federal Highway, I think, three times, and they emphasized that new regulation. Of course, it's a new procurement regulation, so of course they're out selling it on the streets. They're encouraging us to use it. They're encouraging us to use it for the reason that the regulation got passed, which is to promote innovation, to promote building a better mousetrap, to promote the very issue that we're looking at of not getting stuck with a product that we would rather not have. They also, Federal Highway, which was two individuals, one from the East Coast, one from the West Coast. They also encourage us, they encourage us to do the pilot. They felt like the pilot was kind of going above and beyond what typically is done. And they emphasized that we should not conduct the pilot with the contractor selected for the project. In other words, they wanted to keep it non-federalized, don't use federal money on it, keep it away from the contractor so that we can be looking at our needs and not low cost needs of the contractor. So we did get some guidance, and I'm confident that either way that we move forward, we will get support and I guess guidance on crafting our specifications in our bid, in our, when we go out to bid. They'll help us either way. Is there a benefit to a performance requirement? You know, that's what I've talked about, is having a performance, one performance requirement for the Valley. In other words, in trying to have one controller for the Valley, is there a benefit to doing that by specification? One side says it will get us a more competitive bid by allowing potentially multiple manufacturers to work with contractors in their bid packages. But again, somebody is going to have to verify. There's always anecdotes, and as I've been told, you can make any argument with an anecdote, but Caltrans has gone through this. Federal Highway has seen this, and that's part of the reason they changed their regulation. And that's basically our decision today to make, is do we want to, as we've talked, go with a performance-based standard or performance-based requirements, because it's beyond just the approved standards, it's requirements that we want, some of which are being reflected in new standards that are being approved, and some of which are not yet. Or do we just specify Intellite, a company that has successfully gone through our pilot? And at the time we went out to the pilot, was the only company that met our requirements. And as far as we know today, is still the only company that does. Siemens comes close, but does not. And others may come close in the future, but have not chosen to do, some like McCain, have not chosen to do so yet. And if you have questions along that, and I would ask Carlos to answer them, because he's much more up to date on what's going on there. Advantech went so far in their report to make a recommendation to go with Intellite. I want to make sure that at least everyone appreciates Advantech's recommendation. They don't own stock in Intellite or Q-Free. They've recommended McCain on projects that they've done. They've recommended Econolite on projects they've done based on the requirements of that jurisdiction that was going out to bid to replace their traffic signalization. The reason that they are recommending Intellite is because of the fit to what we're trying to do in our region, which frankly is somewhat unique. Most people going out to bid on these types of projects are cities like yours, where you don't get into standards, you go with what you've got. You go with McCain, you go with Econolite, you go with Trafficware, whatever you've got, you spec their newest, greatest controller and move on. In our case, we had, as we've discussed, we had multiple manufacturers in use and a need to communicate between our jurisdictions that frankly, most of the current controllers aren't set up to accomplish without expensive software being written to accomplish that. So Advantech fact, has frankly stuck their neck out a little bit in making that recommendation, knowing that there are certain vendors that won't appreciate that. But on the other hand, Advantech does recommend to their clients other manufacturers in other situations. It just so happens that in their opinion, this is the one we should use. And that's the decision we have to make today, is to either go with a performance-based, I'll say specification, but it will include just project requirements as well, not just specifications, but actual requirements that we want and we need, and we've already agreed upon. And the overall goal was one controller and ATMS STMP standard in the region. And again, behaving a little bit more like one jurisdiction instead of 11 or 12, and setting ourselves up for the future and setting ourselves up to integrate with the county, with Caltrans. That's really all that I had for my presentation, which is probably upsetting Carlos at this point for its lack of complicated diagrams. But frankly, we've seen those and our decision is a fairly simple one. I will ask, I'll open up to questions on the presentation, but I'll also invite Carlos to help me answer them, because very quickly I'm out of my capabilities to answer. So, questions? There have to be questions.
Eric, when we move to, this is Ken Indian Wells. When we move to votes, can you just identify what items we'll be voting on or asking for a
there'd be
motion?
Sure, so, Ken.
It looks like we have three motions there, don't we? To accept the results, two, correct. To pick performance versus just going with an actual controller, and to allow for the release of the PSNE. So why don't we do three motions so that we make it a little bit easier, right?
Correct, right. And the third is just releasing the PSNE to the jurisdictions. They're ready to go, and with your approval, we'll send them out to you.
First motion, do we have a motion, is to accept the results of the pilot program? Do we have a
motion? Move to approve John Carella, Cathedral City.
We have a second?
Second, Brian McKinney, La Quinta.
Do we have anyone opposed or abstain?
Mr. Chair, Indian Wells abstains.
Anyone opposed? Okay, seeing none, that motion passes. So the second motion is to discuss the Intellite controller. Does anyone care to try to put a motion forward on that one?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I make a motion that we move to approve the Intellite controller as the standard for the signal synchronization program. I also encourage all cities to make that their standard so that we're not dealing with additional controllers within each one of the cities.
I forgot to mention, I'm sorry, that we currently have three jurisdictions, or maybe even four, out to bid on controllers. Cathedral City, Palm Springs, Desert Hot Springs. So it's a pressing issue for all of us.
And I'll just add discussion to my motion. My motion will stand as I presented it, but every city has the ability to sole source controllers, traffic signals. In our jurisdiction, we put forward a resolution every few years just to reaffirm the fact that You're exempt in traffic signal equipment from going out to a general bid because it's impracticable to have all this different equipment on your shelves to be able to service the city, especially in an emergency situation. So traffic control equipment has always been allowed per state codes to be able to sole source those items. So we've made it basically our policy to sole source, and we've decided on the Interlite controller, and we're going forward with that. We have a bid out that's going to come out this week for 20 such intersections on an HCIP cycle 8 grant we're going to be putting in, and then we have an HCIP cycle 9 pending for 10 more intersections that will do the same, and then all the CVAG signal sync, so everything will be all lined up and do the same. That's just my commentary, but my motion still stands. Thank you.
Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, I have a discussion as well as soon as we have a second.
Any other agency want to second that, or could I as a chair second it? Yeah, okay, so I second that motion. All right, do we have anyone that opposes?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a discussion item or a discussion okay. point. I appreciate what John has talked about in terms of sole sourcing signal lights. Where I have a difference of opinion is if the signal lights are established, certainly it benefits the jurisdiction to have one unit, but here, we're at the beginning here, and it feels to me that it's better for us to go with a performance-based bid, if you will, and let's see what else is out there. And if Interlite is the one that comes through in this bid process, then so be it, let's go with them. But we're at the beginning, and to just sole source from the beginning doesn't sit well with me anyway. That's my comment, thank you.
I guess for clarification, Eric, if you do indicate Interlite, are we sole sourcing, or can, we're not providing the cost for an or equals, correct?
Correct, we can, my understanding, which Federal Highway will work it out one way or the other. We can identify the manufacturer as Interlite along with its platform of software, or we can utilize that performance-based set of requirements / specification. And we can also include in that a statement of some type letting the contractor know that we're not just throwing a specification out fishing for somebody that meets it. I believe we'll be allowed to mention that we've conducted a pilot and that Interlite does meet that standard. Doesn't mean, I mean, again, the contractor wants to be the low bidder. I suspect, as in every case, the contractor will speak to multiple manufacturers trying to find someone that's going to give a low cost and meet our requirements. But at least I think we have, without specifying the manufacturer, I think we have the ability to communicate that we have identified at least one manufacturer that meets that requirement. And I think that would be our intention, is just to make sure that the contractor knows that someone does meet it, and that others may as well, but just to let them know so we don't end up with a mess. So we wouldn't be recommending Interlite, but we would probably be identifying by discussing our pilot that we conducted that we, you know, we aren't just fishing out there for somebody that could possibly meet our requirements. We have identified a firm that can. There may be others, but we have identified a firm. I would think, based on conversations with Federal Highway, that's the direction we would go. Doesn't mean we'll get Interlite. but I think we would at least let the contractors know that we've done our diligence and it's not a spec that nobody can meet. In the old days, you could set up a spec and just copy someone else's spec sheet and utilize that spec so that they would be selected. Caltrans, or not, Federal Highway was much more complicated than that. But now they've simplified all that by allowing you to specify a manufacturer. And the arbiter of whether we can do that is Federal Highway. Federal Highway, in reviewing our CONOPS and our SEMP, will determine whether we've, for any of the equipment, you know, whether it's a Bosch camera or a switch or any other piece of technology that we've identified, a sensor, before we can just list the manufacturer, Federal Highway will verify that we've made the case for that through our technology assessment and our CONOPS and our SEMP. And all indications are right now, although we do not have a final word from them, all indications are that they will approve that. They've encouraged us to try and do that. And I don't know if the county was going to weigh in, but I'll just mention that the county has agreed to go with whatever we come up with. If it's that new Chinese startup that meets our spec, they would go with that. And if it's in a light, they would go with that.
Eric, can I add something to that?
Please.
You know, keep in mind that right now we went through the performance specs requirements over 550 or so. And yeah, but Intellite's the only company, but through the process, now one of the requirements is to for CVAC and the region to get the MIPS, which is a software language, basically, for free. About a month ago, Siemens made that commitment now to release their MIPS to the agency. So more and more of the providers are getting understanding the process that we need to get away from the proprietary process more into an open architecture. And the other one is the APIs. That's kind of like the controller have different applications like phones. You know, right now it's just Intellite, and again, the other ones, Siemens and others are moving towards that. So what that's saying is, right now to move the project forward, we can say Intellite, but 5 years from now, all of them will be the same. In 5 years from now, it'll be all software related, not hardware. We're moving into the software as a service too, in the cloud, basically. So sooner or later, there'll be other options there as well, too. But right now, the options that meets the latest standards requirements in the nation really is Intellite.
Okay, so we've had discussion. Anyone with further discussion? We have a motion and a second. So if we don't have any further discussion, we can vote.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to hear the motion. Just please restate.
John, care to restate that motion?
I move to approve the Interlight controller as the standard controller for the signal synchronization project. And I also encourage cities to standardize their entire city's controllers on the Interlight, so that all the equipment is the same within the valley.
Thank you.
Okay, so the motion, Tom, you have your hand raised or you're clapping? You're on mute.
Someone unmute, Tom.
Thank you. I've been muted all this time. I haven't been able to comment. I'm concerned about some of the language in the motion in that it says make it the regional standard. Would that require all cities to use that standard when procuring equipment using federal or state funds? There are several jurisdictions out there right now that are replacing our existing controllers that are not on the on CVAG's corridors, identified corridors,
would this prohibit us from proceeding with those projects and acquiring the federal funding to do that? I would recommend that the motion be amended to reflect that the standard applies to the projects that are being constructed on the identified CVAG corridors.
Yeah, John, could you, if you would,
restate? Well, just specifics.
What was a recommendation?
My recommendation is to approve the Interlight controller as the standard for the CVAG signal synchronization project.
And we'll stop at that. There you go. The other one is an encouragement, which you can do after the motion. But for the motion, that is the motion.
Okay, so, I amend my motion so as just with the first part.
All right, I had already seconded. If no more comment, we can vote. Anyone opposed to the motion?
Mr. Chair, Indian Wells opposes the motion.
So noted. Anyone abstain?
Palm Desert abstains.
So we got one abstention, one opposing. I think with that vote, I think that the motion passes. So the third motion is to authorize the distribution of the PSNE to the individual jurisdictions. Do we have a motion?
Boy, everyone's really talkative today. Is everyone up?
Who is on mute, I think. Anyone care to motion that we...
I'm also City of Indio.
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Move to authorize City of Indio.
So we have a second.
I'll second. Brian McKinney.
Okay. Do we have anyone opposed? Anyone abstain?
Indian Wells will abstain.
Okay, one abstention, the motion passes. Moving on to item 6B. Staff report.
Thank you, Chair. I'll do this real quick. Hang on. So as you know, development of the RIVCOM, formerly known as RIVTAM, it kicked off in August of 2018. And the project team is led by WSB with assistance from Fair and Pierce. Project team has been developing the base year model and is in the process of validating the model. The project team is also in the process of beginning to develop the future year model. And prior to these efforts, there's an approach that's being proposed on how that future year roadway network will be developed. Chris from WRCOG is here, and so is Jason Pack from Fair and Pierce. And I attached a memo to the staff report on this item, and they will discuss that and just get some, they'll present the information and get some feedback from you. So Chris or Jason, I don't know which one of you is going to take over, but the floor is yours.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we're here to just provide you a quick summary on how the future roadway network of the countywide model will be developed. We've provided a few updates to the TTAS. And so WRCOG, in conjunction with CVAG, are currently leading an effort to develop a new countywide model, RIVCOM, which will replace the current RIVTAM. The existing year, base year, will be 2018 with a future forecast year of 2045. The model will utilize the SCAG 2020 RTP model inputs as a base I think it was last summer or maybe early fall, we went to our jurisdictions to get their input on the base year inputs. And we're going to go through the same process for the future year at the appropriate time. May I get the next slide, please? So we believe that the model will be heavily utilized for SQL level assessment, a majority for traffic volume forecast for TIAs. Now SQL requires that all assumptions utilized be reasonably foreseeable. So with this in mind, the project team and WRCOG are recommending that the future year roadway network be based on a fiscally constrained roadway network, or in other words, only include roadways with some level of assured funding, either in a CIP, Measure A, TUMF, et cetera, to maximize the defensibility of model results. To note, the current RIVTAM, the future year network, includes a number of unfunded roadway improvements. And may I get the last slide, please? So RIVCOM will be provided to those jurisdictions that want to refine the network to include projects in a jurisdiction circulation element, or for applications where SQL considerations are not a part of the analysis. Mr. Chair, this is a receive and file item, but either Jason from Fair and Pierce or I are happy to discuss if there are any questions or concerns.
Thank you. Any questions? I don't see any questions. Moving on to item 8, announcements. So, got announcements, Eric or Martin?
No announcements on our end.
Okay, so the next meeting is scheduled for Monday, June 22nd at 10 a.m. I do want to ask the question that the chair position is a rotating yearly position, right? So I think the next meeting we should be picking a new chair.
That is correct.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, have a comment or a question by Mark Greenwood.
Yeah, I didn't see that. Yeah, Mark.
There you go. Back on the RIVCOM item, will an output out of RIVCOM be BMT, vehicle miles traveled, to satisfy the upcoming requirements?
So, Mark, this is Jason Pack at Fair and Pierce. Yes, that's one of the main goals of why we wanted to update RIVTAM, is there are some existing limitations in how we can extract BMT out of RIVTAM. So we're trying to make that a little bit easier, a little more holistic, make sure that we're accounting for some of the BMT that occurs at the model external stations out in Coachella Valley, specifically at the border with Arizona. So we want to just make sure that we're building the tool or building the model as appropriate as possible to account for all of that for use for each of the jurisdictions.
So using Indio as the example, many small development proposals, each needing some kind of SQL analysis, including traffic, will RIVCOM give the BMT outputs to each specific city or each specific subregion so that that BMT information can be used directly in the TIA?
Yeah, so it'll have the capability of extracting BMT in a variety of ways. There was a fair bit of time in setting up the TAS boundary structure of the model so that we could match city boundaries exactly, as well as looking at sphere of influence and try and match that up so that if you did want to extract VMT at a citywide level, it would match directly with your city boundary, which RIVTAM currently doesn't do. We did give that a fair bit of forethought to be able to set it up so that you could extract VMT data from the model in a variety of different ways to make it as easy as possible for you to estimate VMT at the city level, go down to a more refined TAS level to pull it for project specific application. So that was one of the forethoughts while we were constructing this, was understanding the need to do that eventually. I will say WRCOG has developed kind of their own screening tool through a grant funded program that they received from SCAG. So there is a screening tool that WRCOG has for their member agencies. So I think the intent was always to, once RevCom's updated, to be able to extract VMT and put it in that GIS-based screening tool for WRCOG. I don't think CVAG has an equivalent right now, but clearly the ability to export the data is there for all of your agencies.
Okay, and then, great, that's all good information. I encourage CVAG to develop that screening tool similar to WRCOG, similar to San Diego County Region. But in the interim, would we have to run the model to extract VMT, or will the developer's consultant have access to VMT information directly?
Yeah, so right now, WRCOG has provided all of the travel demand model files on an external share site. So any developer coming in that wishes or needs to estimate VMT for a project does have access to all those files and should be able to estimate it for any geography that they choose. And that will be available to any consultant developer, just with the understanding that they will require the appropriate software to access and run the model or to run the model data and access the data files.
Okay, great. And then very last question, when will this be available for use?
RevCom or RevTAM? So RevTAM is already available and that's accessible. The new RevCom model, we're finalizing validation and calibration of the model with WSP. Where we're a little held up is this future year model network development. Since we are starting with some of the SCAG RTP funded roadway network, we hit a little bit of a delay of SCAG releasing the data because of how the RTP SCS was not certified at the SCAG General Assembly or the equivalent to it.
So do you have, can you take a stab at a date when it would be available for RivCom?
Yeah, so that base year data should be done, so August timeframe is I think what we're scheduling right now for finalization, calibration, validation. So the future year model, you know, Chris, maybe you could weigh in a little bit, but I'm guessing it's gonna be later this year after we get the data from SCAG. My best guess would be quarter four, depending on SCAG data.
Great, thank you very much.
Chris, you had a question, Christopher, or no?
Sorry, I was just gonna answer Mark's question, but Jason nailed it. You know, SCAG's delayed their approval of the RTP until I believe it's early September. And so I think we're estimating that it'll probably be early next calendar year with the hope that it might get expedited a little bit. But you know, we're aiming for early next calendar year.
Okay, thank you. If there's any other announcements or comments, if not, Tom? You're on mute.
There you go. Just for future meetings, perhaps we can fix the mute, unmute issues. It's very difficult to participate in a meeting when you're precluded from speaking. It kind of thwarts the free flow of information. So I understand there's technical difficulties, but it was very challenging to be able to converse on the TTAS without being able to speak.
With the control, I guess we can fix that for the next meeting, CVAG, but was a control on one person's end, or did everyone have the ability to unmute themselves?
I think there's an option on
it was all on your end.
On the bottom right, there's an option to raise your hand, and then the host would mute and unmute those individuals raising hands to speak.
So in this situation, the host is CVAC, correct?
Yeah, Beverly is, yeah.
Okay.
So just to interject from a non-host, I don't have a raise hand button. That's why I was late to the conversation. I had to scramble to try to find through multiple screens to raise my hand.
Nor do I. I don't have a raise hand either. I am limited to my thumbs up and my clapping to try to get attention.
Yeah, likewise.
I think
I'm able to unmute myself though.
I think you might have missed the announcement at the beginning, but there is under participants. The participant icon on the bottom, I think there's the ability to raise your hand through that. It's not with the clap or the thumbs up icon. It's under participants. And to the right of your participant, you have the ability to raise your hand.
Got it.
And Joelle covered that at the beginning of the meeting, but I think you were just joining.
When the meeting announcements go out, can they go out via email or Outlook? That way we can do a direct link to the meeting rather than having to join via the password and meeting ID number.
Everyone will still need to use those features, but we can have staff send you an Outlook, send the members an Outlook invite for sure.
Outlook has an application to where Zoom calls are directly attached to the Outlook calendar. Just by clicking on the link, it'll open up Zoom.
We'll have to look at CVAG's version.
Okay.
But thank you for the comment.
Okay, if no more comments, I think the meeting is adjourned.
All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.